This podcast is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability, criminal prosecution, and the wrath of the tall man.
Boy!
Hey, let's talk about you. The ID10T community events at ID10T.com, like Russ Stevens, a.k.a. Cool Movies Darth, who has started a podcast called 90 for Chill, which Russ says is dedicated to movies with a runtime between 74 and 99 minutes, the time frame that I feel is ideal. Russ, I could not agree with you more. That is a fantastic idea. Russ goes on to say, there are times you need a cinematic fix but don't have time for the latest Scorsese masterpiece or offering from a comic book universe. There's also times when you know you need a conclusion to prevent a binge costing you a whole night. My guests and I try to follow these guidelines as we chat up features that are definitely worth your time and are beyond easy to make time for. 90 for Chill, the podcast, can be found on all major podcast platforms at 94chill.com, and that's spelling out 90, N-I-N-E-T-Y, 4-F-O-R, chill. So there you go. Thank you so much for sharing, Russ. Really great idea for a podcast. Events at ID10T.com for everyone else.
Previously on 90 for Chill, the podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to introduce myself. I am the warden, and I have gathered you all here to participate in a little game called And Then There Were. Now we're cooking with gas. An audience will be watching you.
Whoa, slow down. What's this about a website?
Some guy's head just exploded on the internet.
Some game or something.
Our society has shifted into one built on cyber likes, and it will be incumbent on each of you to acquire as many as possible. The game is about to begin.
Is this where I'm supposed to beg for my life?
And you must all pay for your sins. Sins you committed.
This is personal. Someone's idea of revenge.
Call for backup. I think we might have found a warden.
Looks like we have company. Now, where were we?
I got you.
Is this what you want?
You're eliminated. Stay tuned.
So, looking through iTunes today, primarily for the $5 movies, I came across this feature called Death Count, which looked silly to begin with. And then I look at the plot of, basically, it's a Saw knockoff, you know, play the game to, if you want to live type stuff. And our villain is played by Costas Mandalore, who is Detective Hoffman from the Saw movie. So it's like, all right, well, if we're going to rip off Saw, let's go right and try to make it as close as we can. And when you throw Michael Madsen in as the detective trying to stop him, I can't help but be intrigued. And, you know, it's an amusing enough movie, I should say. I mean, there's nothing great about it. Well, scratch that. They do pretty well on the gore effects and the torture effects. Again, I can't really say the film is shot very well, but, you know, it still gives you that, not quite a gorgasm, but it, again, amuses. The acting is, well, Michael Madsen's totally phoning it in. Costas Mandalore, those get to just totally heal up, so it's kind of fun seeing him be what Hoffman really wanted to be. So this is a nice little side project, I'd say, to the Saw features. Definitely doesn't have anybody involved. I believe this is a film produced by the Mahal family, not the Jinder kind, or at least as far as I know. So a lot of executive producer credits, you know, it's just something that probably got, the budget probably went in to get Mandalore and Madsen on it. And that's about it. But as I say, it's just amusing enough. The twist, the getaway of our protagonist works out pretty well, and you know, it's a fun take on the And Now There Were None, aka the 10 Little Native Americans. So I think it's, if you like Agatha Christie, you like Saw, Hostel, any movie which really just tries to sell you on gore for the sake of gore, I think you're going to be amused, and it might be worth 90 minutes on Tubi. But high art, it is not.
And outside the 67th Annual Academy Awards, the stars keep coming. Here's Jeremy Hawke, star of the illogical, blasphemous, and ultra-violent Crocodile Gandhi movies.
Thank you. Thank you. Jeremy!
And let's hear it for Roger Ebert. Jay Sherman.
Idiots.
Yeah, Zoom just sounds very disappointed in us. I think it's
a good point.
It just realized, I think everybody's just using it for podcasting now since corporate America has placed everybody back in the office. Just there's your leftist tirade to start the podcast, which I think is a little more fun than just the typical introductions to 90 for Chill, the podcast. And this week's guest is the poetic critic, the wisest mind in Central Illinois cinema. You know, you gotta take some titles when the cinema snob moved up to Lombard.
I'm not that smart.
Ah. Well, I mean, we recently had a Twitter thing, 10 actors that kind of define you.
Oh, yeah, that meme thing, yeah.
Right, so I mean, like, hey, let me take a look at that again. All right, notifications, yep. Okay. No, that's Christine Young. I know it's been passed, or like I was trying to find the original source, but let's see. I think it's just more, and now that I look at it, it is more of just a timeliness thing, I think, which is amazing, you know, just 2 years between us. But, you know, Peter Sellers, Dudley Moore, Gene Wilder, Eric Idle, Tom Baker, Jeff Goldblum, obviously Tim Curry, awesome, David Bowie, Jim Carrey, and Heath Ledger come up as your modern picks, I suppose. I don't know. I didn't think you were that big a Heath Ledger person.
No, I worked my way through most of his filmography about 15 years ago.
Okay. I mean, I've stated my disdain.
I didn't see the Order of Four Feathers remake, but
okay.
I saw most of the others.
Yeah, I just, I can't say I saw much Heath Ledger besides A Knight's Tale back in that 2001 where my friend Jesse would return from a party school every weekend to watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude, yeah, we all know. I mean, I've pretty much said how he's turned out. So, So Knight's Tale's about that. And I was more like, yeah, Paul Bettany. That's where the money is. And Alan Tudyk. I mean, yeah, so
what is it about Alan Tudyk though, really? I don't quite get it. I'm not saying he isn't talented.
Oh, he's just so lovable. He looks so dorky, and he's got such range. I mean, you can throw him in a British picture like nothing. And yeah. And then you have the range, as I say, the range when you go to all his animated movies. I mean, he gets a credit for just being a chicken.
Yeah.
And then K2SO, I mean, I haven't watched Andor yet, but it's like, oh, I can't wait till they get to him.
I looked at the first episode of mm-hmm. Andor, and I thought it was pretty impressive. Yeah, and I'm not really in watching TV shows so much as movies, but yeah, Andor looked pretty promising.
Mm-hmm. And as I say, I just, Heath Ledger, I haven't watched Brokeback, which is one of those blind spots. That's one I got to get to.
It's worth getting around to.
Yeah. And, well, I've always had my grudge with, not a Donnie Darko fan, so I've always had a grudge with Jake Gyllenhaal. You're not Maggie. Okay, that's a weird place. Oh, no. Sorry, I was just getting peripheral stuff in my place. And I saw, so, I mean, going to recent movies, I mean, my actor list really isn't that, I mean, a little more, honestly, not really that different when you really stop and look at it.
Well, no, I was kind of surprised too.
Yeah. So, and as I just stated recently in a tweet, you know, yeah, if we're going to go unisex, I'll replace Keith
David. Yeah, because it didn't look like people were going unisex with these lists. I could probably pull together 10 actresses, too, if I want.
I could put Kelly MacDonald somewhere in there.
I'd have more older performers if I did an actresses list.
Yeah, which is, yeah, kind of a sad thing. You know,
like, I'd put Marlena Dietrich or Mae West.
Gloria Stewart in my... my round. So after recently really getting into the 30s era.
Yeah.
So it's that's an interesting thing. You know, mine were Ewan McGregor, Samuel L. Jackson, mm-hmm. Sylvester Stallone. I mean, I'm an 80s kid. Kurt Russell.
That's the point of this list is, you know, the ones that really mean something to you, the ones that you went and did the deep dives on, that sort of thing.
Right. I don't know. That Maniac Mike guy, though, on Twitter just seems so wise.
Maniac Mike.
Yeah. I can't remember what his at is. Maniac Mike, Mana Wow, Mania 707, Mana 707. He's the guy who did the "Let me judge your mute movie taste," based on your letterbox favorites.
Oh, I remember that one.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, as I say, a little off balance. Start get all the equipment ready, and then like, oh yeah, you forgot the booze, Russ. So taking my shot of Malort for the pod. I have cut down on my Malort a little bit because I've found tequila, like just my philosophy that when you drink tequila, good things happen. And it's been interesting recently. Like, it's going to be tough to get these podcasts done because of the limited hours now I have with a second job at a liquor store. And
I see. Well, so, you know, you'll find a way to work around it. But,
Go ahead, Roar.
With my list, I did note in an aside that at one point I would have put Johnny Depp on the list.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I don't want people, if I want people to get to know me, I don't want to bring that up anymore.
Oh, no. Woody Allen would have made my list, in all honesty. Thank God for Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
So when I put out the
if I could have substituted Depp for maybe Wilder or Eric Idle, because they don't really have as many credits per se anyway.
Yeah.
And that would give a special citation to Michael Crawford, but he didn't do a ton of films.
Right. All I can think of off the top of my head is Once Upon a Forest.
Yeah.
A Funny Thing Happened to Me on the Way mm-hmm. to the Forum and Condor Man.
Did a bunch of movies with Richard Lester. Okay. And the other one people know anymore is for his movies is Hello, Dolly, partially because of WALL-E.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, when it comes to, but I will give the cinema snob credit on his 1981 video. He did kind of make, well, he got Oliver Reed and Condor Man. So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I really do have to get around to watching that.
The trouble is, you have to either join up with Disney's Movie Club to get a DVD copy at this point, or you have to rent it on YouTube, which is what I did last year, and that's pretty much a VHS rip, and it looks terrible.
Well, that's weird. It's a rental, because there's so many stuff that you can just illegally watch on YouTube. I can see that.
There's a lot of stuff you can legally rent.
Yeah,
Disney has a lot of that stuff, but with Condor Man, that movie was clearly framed for Panavision. And... Right.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, I've watched movies on YouTube for this podcast, Like kayfabe, which kayfabe, the totally true story of the untrue story of professional wrestling, and a great film called Low, which made the top 10 list on YouTube. And no, the rips weren't good. You can still rent Low on Netflix DVD. And I could probably make a better rip from that, but I digress. But
I know they can do, better with YouTube, because back in January, I was trying to watch it on Pluto TV, but 1974 Mystery on the Orient Express. But trying to watch it on demand, I couldn't get the, you know, you try to watch those on demand, it's very hard to fast forward or anything. So I bit the bullet and I rented it to get the last 15, 20 minutes in. And it looked fine.
Okay.
It looked pretty much how it would look on, you know, watching it on Pluto or something.
Well,
I know they can do better.
Yeah, well,
the quality of what they have for rental.
Right. No, that's what I'm more or less getting offended by Google, YouTube. It's like, dude, I can watch VHS rips of about any movie on YouTube.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'm not going to pay for a rent on a VHS rip. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
But so when I proposed, I just needed a guest because, you know, me bullshitting for 2 weeks. And granted, last week's episode wasn't really bullshitting, as I'm trying to preserve episodes that I don't know what will happen if and when I change podcast distributors. The mega, like, dang it, why didn't I start doing that more often? The mega podcast. Instead of just like, you know, getting your Spaceballs and the, which, like, the funny thing with Spaceballs is, like, you already did Spaceballs. Can we do it again? Give it time. response.
It's really fun. Spaceballs was really fun because on New Year's Day, Turner Classic Movies usually runs a bunch of sci-fi movies at some point. And this year they decided, well, we'll just do a bunch of comedies in prime time.
Okay.
So they started it with Spaceballs, and I was with the TCM Party hashtag crowd, and it went over really well. And I've noticed, and I realized something somebody pointed out. You know, it's interesting that in Spaceballs, there's no direct analog to Luke Skywalker.
Well, that's
like Lone Star is more of a composite of Luke and Han Solo, and that works, because I pointed out part of the reason the movie works is that they didn't try to just do one-to-one parodies of every single character and plot point we associate with Star Wars. So it has more room to breathe as an actual story.
Oh, yeah. Well, and it goes back to my argument about why people like, especially, you know, starting a new job, I'm, you know, getting, oh, you do movies? What's this? And, you know, 90 minutes. Well, that seems limited. Well, I'm obviously a Star Wars guy. Oh, yeah, I checked out after the prequels, which usually comes from a fellow, you know, a millennial, an older millennial or a Gen Xer. And it's like, no, the only reason the prequels aren't that much fun is because there's no Han Solo in it. There's no scoundrels. Yeah. It's watching a bunch of monks and, you know, it's like,
you know, not even, like the cool kung fu kind of monks you see in some movies.
I wouldn't say necessarily say that. I think pretty much the cool monks are all grounded in the Jedi Order type stuff.
Yeah,
but you get fun scoundrels in those movies, and there's no Han Solo in the prequel, so you don't have a scoundrel. And that's what made Guardians of the Galaxy's first feature so great was, well, basically everybody's a scoundrel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so that's but you know, moving on to, you know, how we got to this podcast recording. It's basically like my Kevin Smith podcast ended up getting canceled last minute. No offense to that guest. You know, life happens. I just wish I had the life where I could cancel random stuff. instead of like, oh yeah, I screwed up time zones or but no, you just you said, oh yeah, I'm free Sunday, and it's like, okay, cool, what are we talking about? And she said potluck,
and it's sort of,
okay, so it's like I did go to IMDb and research potluck. I think there's a 2012 short film where you got potluck and you got a
certain little leaf in the poster for a film with no plot description on IMDb.
Well, so, I was,
but yeah.
So I was giving, I was just trying to come up with something on the fly.
Yes, exactly. I gotcha.
And with that in mind, I was thinking, you know, we have a, there's a lot of stuff going on right now. And we've got the Oscars in a week.
Yep.
And I'm getting frustrated because there's like a zillion streaming services and most of this year's big contenders aren't on the ones I have or I have access to.
Well, I just have... I can offer you my Shudder account information. Maybe there's something.
I don't
there.
Think that can help me, right?
No, I'm just kidding.
You know, if I didn't have Criterion, I would probably look into Shudder for, you know, that kind of boutique streaming need.
You know, really, you should just go if you're going into Shudder. I would probably just get the AMC Plus membership because that also gives you IFC Plus and Shudder. If I'm reading it correctly, it sounds too good to be true. But no, Shudder's just a fun service when you have the likes. I mean,
I've heard virtually nothing but good things.
Yes, and yeah, but as I say, I think AMC Plus because Allie was talking about because I tried accessing Netflix one night, having her credentials, and you know how Netflix is now cracking down, which is like,
exactly
you're not offering what got us to Netflix. why are you now telling us don't go to Netflix? I mean, it's just silly. Okay.
It's, but of the 10 best picture nominees, the only one I've seen so far is Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
And HBO Max does have the Banshees of Inisherin, I think. That,
yeah,
Inisherin.
I have not.
I mean,
tried to
I'll probably
it.
Get around to that.
Mm-hmm.
Try to anyway.
Yep.
But the other nominees are all on other services.
Right. Yep. And recently, like, you know, I bought an iTunes gift card to purchase the wrestling pay-per-view tonight. And then it's like, okay, well, I put $75 on it. What's on iTunes right now? It's end up getting a lot of, you know, oh, well, you know, I want to clear out DVD space, which is not necessarily true. It's like, I really want Black Cauldron in 4K, and I really want Tron in 4K. I still keep
But isn't Disney Plus streaming those?
Yes, but if I took the time to buy it once.
I see what you're saying.
But Banshees was only $5, which was like...
Right. I still need to get around to Crimes of the Future, to be honest. I've got a few newer releases I need to get to.
Well, with that said, you know, I'll next time I'm in town, you know, I think I've installed your TV with my Apple account information, and so it's in there.
Well, yeah, next time you come over, see if we can do something, or else I'll just try and get a physical copy.
Oh, yeah. But as I say, I think it's if you go to Apple TV, it's not Apple TV Plus, obviously, which I've started listening to the Problem podcast with Jon Stewart. So it's like, oh, and as a football fan, real football, it's like I do have to get around to Ted Lasso. And so it's silly stuff. Like, why did I not actually take advantage of that year of Apple Plus when I upgraded to my iPhone 11. But so yeah, Allie was, as I say, they're cracking down on passwords on Netflix. And it's like, you know, I haven't taken the time to look at the complete list of Best Picture nominees. But for me to expect that Netflix had, like, I don't know, I don't hear, I don't see score, I didn't hear anything about Scorsese or Iñárritu offering a movie on Netflix. I don't think they're in the running. So yeah, it's just a very weird time though. It's like, but doing all this, it's like, okay, I gotta try to be on the same page as Rory. So let's see what she's watched on her Letterbox. And thankfully, that made me allowed me to discover the Watch TCM app, which is pretty much for people who have cable or satellite.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been able to get that. So I can kind of play around with the TCM parties because it does have a live feed on it. As I say, it's basically the cable channel, like TNT and TBS.
Right.
So, and so it's like, I don't know about that one. And it's like, oh, the Ritz sounds interesting. And then actually I have
Ritz went over really well. It was part of the last night of the star of the month for February was Rita Moreno.
Mm-hmm.
So this was the part of the last night, which was some of her 70s and 80s movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ritz, that it's a later Richard Lester film.
Okay.
And this was, he did it the same year as Robin and Marion.
Oh, right.
And this was right before he, you know, this was kind of in the downtime between the stuff he was doing for the Salkinds with the Three Musketeers duology on the one end and the later in Superman 2 and 3 on the other.
Yeah, we really got to get the word duology back into the lexicon so people don't know. No trilogies. Duologies. Yeah, so I'm looking through that and then I see, I think it was maybe I'm watching this on, it's in my peripheral and I'm not really paying attention to the boobs and black people walking out of the cleavage and the flashing orange lights. If you know what movie I'm talking about. Space is the Place.
Yeah. This is part of the Afrofuturism collection that Criterion has just put up.
Right. Actually, I think it's on HBO. I think it's HBO Max, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
That too.
So yeah, I got that going in my peripheral. So that's total out of context stuff. And there's the white people. So it's going to get more awkward. This is giving me some very Putney Swope vibes.
Yeah. This is basically between blaxploitation / Afrofuturism film.
Yeah. Yep.
It's very interesting and it's very clearly constrained by an extremely low budget.
Right, but I see a lot of Stargate stuff in it.
Yeah, it's a little morality play.
Mm-hmm.
This was one of a few film projects by the fusion jazz artist Sun Ra. If you look at the Wikipedia, he really was this eccentric.
Yeah, well, it's just reminds me of Weekend Update. Get around to last night's when you can. A lot of fun stuff, especially with the Dilbert stuff. And Dilbert makes an appearance. So yeah, it's like, okay, I could watch this, I could catch up with that. But going back to my iTunes, it's like, I think I just bought, let's see, what were they? The Black Cauldron, Tron. As I say, I'm trying to either clear out my DVDs or it's like lack special features. I'm going to, I still want to see it in a higher than 480. Yeah, that's the term. So going to primary. No, wrong account. Well, there we go. Dang it, come on. Okay, there we go. So what were the one of the titles? Okay, yeah, so bought High Fidelity, which really makes me hate the fact that I haven't gotten around to the Grifters yet since it's Stephen Frears. The other one was Inside Llewellyn Davis because I don't suspect the Coen brothers are going to throw stingers on their at the end of their movies. So, yeah, this should count. That was actually something at work. Somebody, when I told them about the podcast, well, how long is Fargo? And I said, I think it's a little too long. But that's like the perfect movie. And it's like, you know. I get it, but the Coen brothers, like for the most part, like Blood Simple's a perfect movie, if not too perfect. This is your freshman outing, guys. And there's a lot of backlash on Hail Caesar. Like, am I the only guy who likes the inside Hollywood bullshit of that feature?
I think David Merrick, the Broadway producer, once said that the reason the musical Gypsy was not as popular as expected for all the acclaim, and it, and you know, it's hit, is that people don't care about the ordinary person does not care about the problems of show people.
Oh, I could see that. Like, I mean, we all agreed, like, the lady, like, I think more people had fun with the Lady Killers, but it's like, it is probably the Coen Brothers' worst movie, which is saying something, because as I say, I like the Lady Killers, but...
Well, Lady Killers has the... What, one thing working against that is it is a remake.
Yes, I acknowledge that too, but... Yeah. Whenever, where else can you get J.K. Simmons sparring with Marlon Wayans? I don't think you're going to get that in Glorious, which has finally got its iTunes release. But I have Shudder, so. All right, just pouring myself a On the Rocks martini, and I have my Chromebook with the quote from The Simpsons. In the event that I do not dig it. And it's not the kiss of death. What else could I need today? So that's so going back to my iTunes, so it's like I'm going through this and it's like, well, what's going on otherwise? $4.99 stuff. And then I see this so instead of watching a movie that Rory has watched recently, I found a movie on iTunes for sale. I did not purchase it because it's on Tubi from 2022 called Death Count, which is I know I've done a lot for the Saw franchise with this podcast. I keep getting good feedback about those episodes. But and that it was Costas Mandalore, which my mom seems that mom has a fascination with the actor. I haven't directed her to the Saw movies, but he was one of the, he was the primary antagonist of the last, the second trilogy and the 3D movie. So it's kind of like, oh, this is a torture porn movie, and we got him at, he's the antagonist. Yay. Low budget Saw. Cool. Which was fun. The only sad thing about it, like Blood Rain, is Michael Madsen took the job. So, yeah, that was my last night. And fortunately today, my cat was at rather, Ava was rather kind and let me sleep in, or I am truly exhausted from a 60-hour work week. But. And she's been acting very weird since, I think she's trying to fill the void of Skimble.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, well, you didn't mind his annoying shit. Like, you're a queen kitty, Ava. You were, you know, you just needed worship. And now it's like, well, somebody's got to go and trash the place. Like, no, we did not need the place being trashed. But, yeah. She's just, well, yep.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is thinking about things like trying to see the Oscar nominees or what's available where. I thought it's interesting to consider where we are in terms of accessibility to titles and where we watch movies and how at this.
Well, what I think about it.
Leaving the theatricals out of it. But.
Well, what I was thinking about, because recently there was a. Episode of, and they're going to do a second part next week from the Not a Strong Part Cad, Not a Strong Start podcast, which I think is produced by a former guest of the show, George. George, did take a part in this, and they were ranking the last 10 best picture winners.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think everything seems to be more fun towards the top of it. But I think it comes down to, I think Beck's picture, and I think this is a good thing, in my opinion, is this is where, you know, for the most part, or at least back in the good old days of five nominees, This is where the art is. This is cinema with a capital C, if I learned anything from my literature courses of literature with a lowercase L and a capital L. And it's supposed to be impactful, which everybody says, oh yes, this movie, like 12 Years a Slave, boom, you know, gut punch and all that. And it's like, but you know, I'm never going to go back to it. It's like, but that's kind of the point. It's like, I mean, I'm a masochist, so yes, I can, I'm more than happy to take numerous punches to the gut. I shoot Malort before the show, or during the show now, actually, but I digress. But no, it's like, really, if you're going to go to Paris, you want to go to the Louvre, you want to see the Mona Lisa. Are you going to make that your, well, I better go and get around to seeing the Mona Lisa once a year? No, that's not the point. And I think when it comes to the streaming services, obviously, with accessibility, as you were stating, it's like, this isn't going to get a lot of rewatches. So yeah. I can understand that. And also with my iTunes wandering, Marcel Duchamp has now gotten down to $13. And they were saying that was a special price. I think it's going to be the permanent price on that. So I know you saw Marcel, correct?
No.
Oh, I thought I saw somewhere. The little the little talking shell?
No.
No, huh. Heard nothing but brilliant things about that, so I'm pulling for it. Despite I haven't even looked at the animated nominees, in all honesty.
Well, no, the animated nominees this year. Let me look it up.
Yeah, I'm working on that too. All right. Ava, make some noise. Don't need this dead air. That's the problem. Ava's still not a talkative kitty. All right. Well, Pinocchio.
Well, nominees are
yep.
Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio.
Yep.
Marcel Duchamp, Puss in Boots 2, The Sea Beast, and Turning Red.
Well, Sea Beast is what I got to get around to. Obviously.
That's Netflix.
Okay, well, so much for that. You got your only nominee, and I'm not going to watch it. Thank you.
Well, Pinocchio's also Netflix only.
Yes, but
otherwise, I'm checking it out.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, well, it's Guillermo del Toro. I mean, it's like, if it seems like he's doing something right.
Mm-hmm. But that's the thing. Apparently, Netflix has made some good animated features. I wouldn't know.
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Nope, $20 a month is not worth finding out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they, like, I don't, you know, it's weird. I'm going to have to start searching the, since I still have Netflix DVD, and I guess now's the time, which is ridiculous because it's like bad library stuff, you know? Yeah. Maybe libraries should just charge $5 a month and avoid this late fee stuff. Which is what I have with Netflix. It's like, okay, I get 2 discs a month for $5. Yeah, not in the quite in the mood to break down the entire filmography of, let me go through all the titles, The Painmaker, The Oat Show, The Demo God, The Lionheart, The Role Model, Chris Jericho. I mean, I'm only one movie away. I guess I have to watch Terrifier to justify watching Terrifier 2, but, you know, I digress. So future podcasts, there will be the Chris Jericho filmography. So that's, yeah, but with that all said, it's kind of like, well, if Netflix DVD is still the thing, then surely they're going to put their movies on DVD, which they don't, at least from a... working at one of the few retailers where you get a decent DVD selection.
Right. Now, Criterion does have an arrangement with certain Netflix, to get certain Netflix titles out there, like Roma and The Irishman.
Right.
And Marriage Story. But there's still a lot of stuff that's fallen through the cracks so far. Like, there's no physical release of Jim and Andy the Great Beyond. There's no physical release of Dolomite Is My Name.
Oh, that's criminal.
Yeah, the latter especially.
Yes, no, I was about to say, I wasn't saying, no offense to Jim Carrey.
That is a...
How the fudge did Avatar The Way of Water get a nominee nation?
Oh, for best picture. Well, it's a very popular movie that many people greatly enjoy.
But that's just it. No. That's what I liked about the best. Like, you can say, oh, the best picture was pointless. Nobody watched the movies. It's like a little bit of elitism, please.
Well, that's not fair because even in past decades, it's not necessarily elitism. A lot of it is how much you can afford to push for the campaign. A lot of it's industry politics. And a lot of it is some specialized tastes among the voters that the people at large don't have. I mean, well, sometimes you get really lucky and you get some really interesting lineups. Because if you look at a lot of the 1980s lineups, like roughly the first half of the decade, there's a really interesting mix of these really popular movies and then the more eat your veggies sort of films.
Yeah, but it's kind of what I appreciate about the Oscars. It told you the veggies you should be eating.
Well, no, I don't. That's not a bad thing at all. But it's not always what you should be eating so much as what they want you to think they should be eating. It's not always an honest assessment.
Well, no, that obviously came with the late 90s and the Weinstein money.
The what?
The Weinstein money in the late 90s.
Yeah, that really started screwing things up.
Yeah.
But I mean,
I look at the Academy Award for Best Picture this year, and it's like, okay, Triangle of Sadness, cool. Women Talking, yep. Tar, yep. Everything, Everywhere, and All at Once, yeah. All Quiet on the Western Front, Banshees of Inisherin. I got five movies that I can cut out of this. Top Gun Maverick, no. Elvis, no. Avatar, no. Fablemans, no. So maybe that's only four. But you know what I'm getting at.
Well, yeah, but you haven't even seen all these movies. I haven't seen all these movies.
No, I'm not saying I have, but what I'm saying is I know box office, obviously Top Gun Maverick and Avatar.
Yeah.
And I know Spielberg just getting a bone thrown at him, which, I mean, people either love or just like aren't nah to the Fablemans.
Mm-hmm.
And Elvis, it's like, come on, Baz Luhrmann, I just don't think it. I think he's an overrated director. And I don't think he's an overrated director because most people are like, oh, it's a Baz Luhrmann affair. I mean, I've heard more people go on about his stuff before Romeo and Juliet than...
Yeah, like... Strictly Ballroom. He didn't do a ton of stuff before Romeo and Juliet.
I know, but it's like everybody says, well, that's the good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's sort of how if you look at the Danny Boyle filmography, I don't think at this point anyone would put people tend to put Slumdog Millionaire in the top five.
Oh, I'd still put... Nah, Slumdog's a perfect movie. I mean, my only problem with Slumdog is a problem I have with Danny Boyle is that his best movies have a shit scene in it.
But,
with Trainspotting, it's being Spud's accent spread across his girlfriend's family, and in Slumdog, our protagonist is a child jumping through a outhouse toilet to get an autograph. Like, I don't need that much poo. I mean, that's the entire reason I did not, never got around to when Harry Met Lloyd. I hear Bob Saget, just like it was on Comedy Central, probably during a break when I was in call center work. And him screaming about all this shit. Like, yep, yeah, nope, they now I'm totally not it. So,
but no, generally when I'm looking into movies I really want to put on my watch list that I might not check out otherwise given my tastes, I've come to find that going by the major Oscar nominees in a given year usually isn't going to work.
Yeah, I can say that. I can agree to that.
Like, you look at the 1988 Best Picture lineup, and it's very meh.
Which I'm pulling up now.
The nominees that year were Rain Man, which was the winner. The Accidental Tourist, Dangerous Liaisons, Mississippi Burning, and Working Girl. And
no, sorry. Yeah, I was about to say, holy shit, Joe Asnos has a movie that.
And
I forgot that it's, you had to put a year ahead when I did my Google search. But Fatal Attraction got a Best Picture nominee?
Yeah, it was a really big deal.
Huh. Okay, whatever.
Now, there are some really interesting nominees in a lot of the 80s years, but.
Well, looking at Girl, I mean, geez.
Well, Working Girl is the sort of film I wish I liked more than I did.
Because
I've seen all five of these.
Yeah.
And Melanie Griffith just doesn't work for me. And unfortunately, if you can't attach yourself to that,
I got something like, wild. That's about all I can say.
Yeah, it's kind of like a black hole that drags everything down.
Somebody's because watched Bonfire of the Vanities.
Look, there were a lot of problems with that movie.
I know, but I'm just throwing that out there as a statement. That's all.
But well, with Working Girl, he had this really great supporting cast going for it.
Yeah, well, no, Sigourney Weaver.
It's the sort of thing where you do wish Harrison Ford did some more comedies.
Well, I'm more curious, when is Harrison Ford going to get his Lifetime Achievement Oscar?
Yeah, that's kind of surprising. It's never come to that, isn't it?
Well, especially after Samuel L. got his.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's not going to be a great speech, but he's going to be there. That's my Mark Hamill doing Harrison Ford.
Yeah. But you know, Working Girl is the kind of movie I wish I liked more than I did.
I know that was probably mom's favorite of the five.
Mm-hmm. Dangerous Liaisons was kind of a disappointment. Again, maybe it's that it's something about Glenn Close that doesn't work for me.
No, she was on a tear. She definitely. I mean, I know you're Glenn Close. For me, it's not Glenn Close. It was my actress that just seems bad to me, and I will state as I've opened up my On the Rocks premium cocktails, the Manhattan, that it is not the same Manhattan that was served to the head of the mafioso in The Simpsons. It is not dry. It's not flat, flavorless. There's an actress who just really puts me off, and I'm not saying I'm saying that's me. It's not the actress. It's Marsha Gay Harden. That's like, oh geez. I guess it might be that bullshit that they said on the Family Guy when like Brian made a comment at Stewie, and it's like, oh yes, you were staring at that Variety magazine with Glenn Close. She is a very handsome woman. I know Glenn Close has gone and done the Family Guy, and I'm probably sure Marsha Gay Harden has too, but it's like, And honestly, with Marsha Gay Harden, it's more of the role she plays, I suppose, that I know beyond Pollock. Like,
right. The Dangerous Liaisons, I got all this hype going in as for being kind of as sexy as that sort of a costume drama can be.
Yeah, no.
Because you're not, for those not familiar with the storyline, you may be familiar with the movie Cruel Intentions, which is actually based on the same source material.
I was familiar with that. Oh yeah, no! I mean, it's
the same basic story.
I guess it's kind of along the lines of, say, what was Scorsese's period piece? Winona Ryder.
Age of Innocence, which I right. like.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's kind of like, I don't know. Maybe it's just I don't know. Maybe we just outgrown the period piece.
I don't know if it's that. There are some I really enjoyed. But I really enjoy, but it's a tricky form to pull off.
Yeah,
especially I think part of the problem was acting became more naturalistic.
Right,
the sort of heightened approach that a lot of older period pieces took didn't take. The thing about Dangerous Liaisons is that the supporting cast is quite good.
Oh yeah,
there's an early Peter Capaldi appearance. Keanu Reeves is in there.
Yep, yeah.
And they're all lively and fun to watch.
Well, and you have Malkovich. Oh, sorry.
He doesn't really get to tear it up in that one.
Well, he really.
I have to wonder what it would have been like if the actor who played the role on stage, which was Alan Rickman, was in it.
Oh, jeez, yeah, that.
He did the show on stage.
Hmm. Yeah,
Now I like Rain Man enough.
Right.
I see why that movie was as popular as it was. Mm-hmm. And it was fair for its time and how it depicted autism. Although, you know, nowadays it kind of.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a hidden misrepresentation because most of us don't have the savant skills depicted in this film.
About the experience,
but also how you relate to a person relates to neurotypicals is still intriguing.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing with high end, which isn't all that savant stuff, is that, you know, people. Oh, I'd say it about, you know, coworkers I've had who, like, you know, talking about my older sister. Well, she has Asperger's, which I know is a word we're not trying to a name we're trying to disassociate with it, which I think is a good thing. You know, autism is autism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh yeah, I have that. It's like, yeah, I can tell that. I don't, you know, I didn't mean that as an insult towards him. It's more like goes back to the classic joke on Big Bang Theory. I am not crazy. My mother had me test it. And then it's like, oh, they're not crazy. They're just weird. Okay, we can live with that. No, you gotta help, you know, you gotta help them along.
But,
you know, and I think that's, again, why a lot of autistic people end up in acting is because it's assigned roles. And dare I say, that's probably why I'm more comfortable in a customer service field, is because I am playing a role. With that said, there's a total disclaimer. No, I actually genuinely care about all of your concerns when you come to my desk.
But going back to Rain Man, I see why that won.
Yes.
Because it wasn't, I mean, it was this gigantic box office hit too.
Right. No, it's Tom Cruise at his peak.
Yeah, it's kind of everything came together at that one point.
And I should say,
as it was.
And as I say Tom Cruise at his peak, I'm saying, oh, genuine Tom Cruise at his peak.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, as a professional wrestler, I appreciate him breaking his bones every movie. But I am not, like, I don't know. I, like, Mission Impossible 4 was when it peaked for me. I think it's all just better acted Fast and Furious bullshit after Ghost Protocol. Where's my, and now I'm just more disappointed, like, well, where's my Jeremy Renner spy movies? I like the Bourne Legacy. I like Ghost Protocol.
Yeah. And looking at the other nominees, my favorite of the five is Kasdan's The Accidental Tourist.
Yes.
Which is probably the one that's the least talked up now.
Yeah, well, you say that, but it's kind of like, I think Filmies kind of hold it as the highest.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of people really like Dangerous Liaisons. No, and Working Girl has the more vocal following, I think.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it's more of the subtle fan, you know.
Oh yeah, that Accidental Tourist is not the flashiest movie ever.
Right.
You know, it's led by William Hurt, and
well,
we have to put that aside. It's a little awkward now because we learned this is another case where most of us didn't realize what a rot, lousy person the guy was until after he died.
Oh, you see,
awkward.
See, I didn't know about the William Hurt after his death stuff.
Yeah, well, after he died, Marley Madeline has a lot to say about him. I'll put it that way. Apparently, not the only person.
Let's see. He's just so great in A History of Violence, Personal Life. Yeah, Hurt Mary, 91, Private Pilot. He dated Marley Madeline for 1 year. They cohabitated two. Off screen later, Madeline relationship involved drug abuse and physical. No, I mean, that's one of those. Why didn't we actually? I'm sorry to Marley Matlin. It's one of those society smacked up there. Pardon my French. I will edit that later. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should have known about that in 2009. Like, we should have taken that very seriously in 2009, not after his death.
It's getting very frustrating whenever any major public figure dies at this point, that it's only then that a lot of this stuff finally gets some real air.
Yeah, right.
Even if it's been talked about before.
Well, that's just it. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, I'm just saying, this isn't, who's that? Jimmy Savile.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, now we find out he's a creep after he's dead.
Yeah, partially because a lot of it was covered up for a long
time. No, obviously. But I'm just saying, like, Marley Matlin had her book released where she said all that stuff. We didn't take it seriously. It's like, mm-hmm. we're so quick, at least back then, you know, and when you look going back mm-hmm. to Johnny Depp, it's like, no, there's still people who, no, he's fine. No.
And you rarely ever hear the reverse where somebody was having a really hard time of it, and you don't learn until later that they were really getting the short end of the straw in life.
Yeah, I know, but it's like, again, it's like, no, we shouldn't have thought about this shit when he died. We should have, like, We gotta take accusations seriously to begin with, but mm-hmm. the entire Amber Heard, Johnny Depp saga proves that we aren't ready for that, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm pretty sure if it wasn't for Johnny Depp fandom, we would have taken, you know, Amber Heard might have come out on the other side.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was, it's just total. And then I see that he died of prostate cancer, which is pretty preventable. So it's kind of like, I guess we'll call that a win. Sorry, William Hurt. I don't wish death upon anybody. Limp the rest of your life. Yeah, I'm for that.
Okay. Let's not talk about cancer and all that. We got to get back to the movie. And the last of the Best Picture nominees for 88 was Mississippi Burning.
Right, which is your classic message movie from a movie poster look.
Oh yeah, well, it's not just that. It's there was a big run of movies at the end of the 80s that were related to, and the turn of the 90s that were related to, that were more or less period pieces about the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
And or there were a string of movies around this time about South African apartheid.
Yes.
Which are like semi-period pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And Mississippi Burning is basically one of the subgenre of how white people solve racism movies.
Yes, yeah. Sadly, I don't think we've gotten out of that.
No, we haven't, but this is one of the more egregious examples of that in terms of how it very much centers the white people.
Yes. Well, we can't relate to black people. We shouldn't even be living with them. Not my thoughts.
This is where basically the white people get the personalities and the black people are basically the faceless masses on the side.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, thank God for Glory the next year, I suppose. At least I remember Morgan Freeman and Denzel more than I remember Matthew Broderick and Cary Elwes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that says a lot, too, about what the priorities were. When you look at the 1988 nominees, but this also goes to show that what often gets there isn't the... It's more like what the Academy's comfortable with. Because if you were going to put a Willem Dafoe movie up at the top for 1988...
It'd be The Passion.
It would not have been Mississippi Burning.
Yes, no. It'd be... Last Temptation of Christ, yes. But thinking of Willem Dafoe, I recently watched the video today on YouTube from Wrestle Talk. Actually, it was probably their sister channel, Parts Funknown. Of worst WrestleMania entrances, and they brought up the fact that you're winning a champion, you're winning tonight, get a cool entrance, you're losing tonight, get your theme music played live. Uh-huh. And it's kind of like it's kind of making me think, well, that's what wrestling needs more of. Now I'm not saying weekly, but yes, live musical performance. That's probably another reason I dislike movie musicals for the most part, or is like, yeah, no, it doesn't fit the narrative, but you know, Streets of Fire, like, that's what I want for I know Hunter Hearst Helmsley, Triple H, Paul Levesque has a heart condition that won't let him wrestle again, but we're leaving money on the table if we don't get the Will Ferrell, Willem Dafoe. The Willem Dafoe versus Triple H sledgehammer fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, no, Streets of Fire, now I'm further appreciating that movie. It's like, yes, we could use a musical number to build up this anticipation. So, like, there's a Japanese wrestler. She was a former Japanese pop idol, mm-hmm. Maki Ito. So when she got kicked out of her girl group, probably for being too old or some shit like that, she went into wrestling and she sings her entire entrance music live. I mean, God appreciate that.
Streets of Fire was very popular in Japan.
I did not know that.
Yeah, right. It was a major inspiration for, I think Bubblegum Crisis.
I could see that. I'm only familiar with 2040, but I can definitely see that. When I was looking for gifts to share on my most recent postings online for that podcast about B-Fest from a couple of weeks ago, I Willem Dafoe, Streets of Fire. And the popular meme that comes up is basically Willem Dafoe's walking into the flames in his leather suspenders with his grin. And I think it was Sephiroth from Final Fantasy VII. doing a similar thing.
Yeah. But no, Streets of Fire did pretty well in Japan and was an inspiration for looking up this stuff. Bubblegum Crisis and the original Final Fight.
Oh, definitely. There's a lot of people screaming that for Final Fight. It's like, I don't know about that. I mean, obviously, if it's the creator's sense of view, good. But I mean, the premise, yeah.
Oh, the creators have said yes. That's why the main characters have the same name, Cody.
Oh, I did not research that because all right.
Yeah. And you know, it's about a kidnapping.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I'm just glad I still, like, when I purchased a Super Nintendo Classic, and it's like, what games are on this? All Winners, cool. And I can sell these, I can sell these old physical copies. And then it's like, and then I'm watching a What Culture video games list, and it's like, oh, characters you can't see anymore because the poison character, like, they had to go and replace her with a male equivalent. And so Poison's actually considered the first transgender character in video games.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, shoot, do I still have my copy of Super Nintendo Final Fight where that's the only place it is? Yes! Good. Collector's item, something I'm not going to sell, but at least I know if I have a drug addiction someday, I will do some Bob Saget for that, with that. So,
but what it comes down to is when you're dealing with award season, you always have to take things with a grain of salt. Should be obvious, but it isn't always to everybody.
So with that said, though, it's a comment, suggestion on the Rewatchables, a podcast on the Ringer Network, and usually hosted by the guy who runs the entire network, Bill Simmons, that we really shouldn't have awards until 5 years after the movies come out.
No.
Well, I mean, it's basically justice for Val Kilmer not getting a supporting actor Oscar for Tombstone, but you know what I'm getting at. Like, really, what's the impact of the feature? I mean, let's just go back to 1999. Well, 99, honestly, I think American Beauty gets shat on too much, but Shakespeare in Love, probably not enough. Which was my big thing about the Spielberg draft. Like, I was all for Billy Ray Bruton saying, no, Jurassic Park does not deserve to be in the top 10. Yes! Justice for Westworld. And then he replaces, when it got vetoed, he replaces it with Saving Private Ryan. Uh-huh. Like, yes, that's a very appreciable Billy Ray Bruton move. But you didn't have to choose violence. So, yeah. I don't know. Fanboys. Fan persons, I should say. It's better just to avoid them, personally, but then we wouldn't have podcasts. So, honestly, it's fun talking about the 1988 Oscars. Or are we... Sorry. I guess those movies are technically... Well, they're 25-year-old years now, but it's kind of like, doesn't really fit in with Oscar 95. I think that's what they're promoting the Oscars this year as.
Yeah, 95th Oscars, yes.
Right. Well, I'm just saying, Oscars 95. It's like...
Yeah.
Well, hopefully WrestleMania will call the next one 40 with that being said. But I digress. That was something with professional wrestling, and like Vince McMahon hated naming, you know, numbering the WrestleManias because now they seem old. It's like, you know, UFC's last card was 285. Like, age is really just a number. So,
this here, that also brings up the ongoing mystery of what do you call it? The Oscar ceremony itself.
I'm there to see the winners. I don't give a shit about the presentation. I mean, the winners, as in, I personally like the political speeches, but usually it's because it agrees with my politics. I mean, I'm sorry, Dinesh D'Souza is never going to win a documentary, so I don't have to worry about that bullshit. Which kind of makes me really disappointed that Mom and Dad actually went to see Obama 2016 or something. Hillary Clinton's America. Like, you do realize this guy just is going to prison, right? But no, that's my statement. It's like, yes, I'm all for the speeches. But I could care less about the musical numbers. It's kind of like, because I know they're going to not, like the best musical number ever at the Oscars, as far as I'm concerned, is Blame Canada, performed by Robin Williams. And we knew that was not going to win. So, and let's see, what won the 1990, which Little Mermaid song won?
Under the Sea.
Okay, that was okay. But wasn't Kiss the Girl nominated?
Yes.
Oh, geez. See? It's like... And... for Aladdin, did Whole New World win?
Yes.
Oh, that's bullshit. Because wasn't Friend Like Me nominated?
Yes, it was.
And wasn't that the best performance?
Yes, it was fine.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at. I don't need the pomp and circumstance aside from booing when they forget a name on the posthumous awards. So don't smeg up Tom Sizemore, is what I'm saying.
Well, at this point, the in memoriam segment's kind of become an embarrassment. For one thing, you only do about 30 to 40 names.
Then it's an embarrassment of riches.
Because you have to skip a lot of people.
Yes. No, you need a tragic death. Anne Hesh, Tom Sizemore, they should be good.
But, all right.
Talking about eccentric movies, now I'm seeing the guy being rescued in Space is the Place. Like, all right, I really don't know where the direction is going with this feature. How is this a 71 on Rotten Tomatoes? And it's like, oh, you know, these guys aren't actors. Okay. In Memoriam.
Because that was one of the most criticized parts of last year's telecast, because they were trying to do a gospel style number during the in memoriam.
And they were giving
certain performers higher priorities than others.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, last Oscars I watched was the 2020. So, which I thought was an all right show. I don't think they really had a host for that one, did they?
No.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It's pretty clear no one really wants to host the Oscars anymore.
And I don't blame them. I mean, you're basically going to be held as a scapegoat for why it's not didn't work.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it didn't work because either the movies aren't interesting or everything around the host was screwed up. I stand by Oprah, Uma.
I was tweeting along with last year's show, and It was general. The tone generally was that show was a disaster even before Will Smith did that thing.
Oh, I did have fun with that when we were doing the podcast with Gregory Carl about that, where he basically went to blame Jada Pinkett Smith. And it's like, I'm not saying, I mean, no, it's not Jada Pinkett Smith's problem. It's Will Smith being a bitch. But regardless, he went, it's like, oh, and it's like, I guess I'm playing the entire YouTube clip I've downloaded of all the smegs from Red Dwarf for a minute. Yeah. Honestly, like, they really should be, like, I know for ratings, they should really be not forming these crisis groups and everything. You get a year that you're like, this year you can say, oh, it surely will not happen again.
Yeah.
And then it'll happen. And then it's like, now it's a selling point.
Well, no, I can't remember the last time they put together a crisis team. I think the last time was in 1989.
Well,
which was the show, which was for the 88 movies.
Yeah.
Because they actually did this team afterwards, because it went over so badly.
Right, but that was just a bad show. not a emasculated douchebag slapping somebody because his wife can't take a joke.
But
bad, yeah, bad joke.
But,
yes,
yeah, this. But last year's show was pretty unhappy. Pretty unfortunate experience.
It was a lot of it was
just promoting things.
Well,
and
but
there's always some element of promotion beyond, and I'm speaking beyond just the idea of the movies, that they basically insulted animated features that aren't made for children by basically acting like they don't exist.
With that said, maybe it was technically a 2021 release, but where is Mad God's Flowers?
I don't know.
I mean, if it wasn't 2021, I mean, this was the movie of 90 for Chill 2022. It's like, if it was a 2021 movie, oh, well, that is the problem with me having two screens at my hands. Best animated. Feature 2022. Nominees. Okay, 2022. Probably Raya and the Last Dragon was not worth it. Well, no, honestly, Mom watched Reyes and liked it, so I guess that puts it ahead of Encanto. But that's like, no, like, that's just, no, honestly, screw the Oscars now. Where is Mad God's nomination?
I wish I could find the short lists and see what it would have been eligible for.
Well, Mad God, well, I suppose you could break it down to shorts, but Mad God was 90 minutes.
No.
Yeah, I know what you're going for. When I say all that, well, the shorts look pretty solid. That's at least 2022. Honestly, shorts are probably more meaningful than the features. That's the problem. Yeah, the shorts seem more interesting than I would say the features.
Mm.
But I think, yeah, I don't know. I think that just goes to the fact that you have a documentary short category, and it's like, maybe the messages are better served for, you know, 30 to 45 minutes instead of an hour and a half. I don't know. It's, but yeah. Nope. So I don't know, with this kind of observation, it's kind of like the best movie to ever win best animated feature would be Spirited Away. Just because it does more for the entire genre of, the entire art of animation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't even want to, want to quit Googling. It's like, what about 2000? Where's Perfect? Well, no, they didn't have the award in 2000. So,
no.
Where's Perfect Blue? All right.
So. But they quasi intentionally insulted adult animated features.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because it was cross promoting with Disney again.
Right. I don't know. It's, well, there's this.
But also,
you got to take it off ABC, I think, is the thing.
They're the only ones willing to pony up the money, I think. You have to pay a fee to broadcast the show.
No, I understand that. And it's a good deal for Disney. I'm not questioning that. I'm just saying, it's like, the most recent Screen Drafts episode was the Independent Spirit Awards Best First Feature, which is really good.
But also,
yeah,
the tone of last year's show, a lot of people pointed out, was a lot of the jokes were being made at the expense of the Best Picture nominees for being boring or too long or what have you. That didn't seem like they wanted to honor what was actually nominated. Instead, they were trying to do stuff like find some excuse to bring up Spider-Man No Way Home.
Yeah, I do need to watch.
The notorious online Twitter vote.
Are they doing that this year? Or did they?
No. It's clear that was never going to work.
Okay. Yeah, no. Bunch of assholes then, in honesty. Because when I look at the 2022s, this is better than the 2023 offers. I mean, Belfast, overrated. West Side Story, I've heard great things. I mean, I know you're a fan, but I can see why it's not in the top 11 Spielberg movies per Screen Drafts. King Richard, bullshit. Licorice Pizza might have just been a mandatory look. We respect Paul Thomas Anderson. We're just not gonna honor him. Don't Look Up. No, that should not have gotten a nomination. So again, that's my thing. Like, when you break down these 10 nominations, you obviously know 40-50% that don't actually deserve to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now that I'm looking at it, like, I chose my Peoria Rivermen's quest for the championship over going to see Nightmare Alley at Ebert Fest in black and white.
Uh-huh.
Not going to regret that because I got a championship out of it. But you know what I mean. Yeah, no, if you're going to insult your best pictures, it's like, that means you're totally doing this bloody show for nothing but the ratings. And it's like, don't you get it? Nobody watches TVs on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, look, this should be on CBS. You at least know the TVs are on. Per Family Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now we turn to an episode of JAG. Hey, I found the evidence that proves that, honestly, is anybody watching this?
Yeah, retirees. Gives them some background noise.
How you doing? Remember
how's that hip doing? Remember the 40s?
Which kind of makes me think, oh, Mom would probably be watching the Oscars more if it was on. That's the problem with boomers. Some of them really embrace what the what did my mother do?
No. But you know, looking ahead, this
I don't year, know. I'm just saying when what did my mother do? And my mom's joking about how grandma's laughing at her for having coffee every morning. It's like, yeah, you're a pack of cigarettes from being Yvonne. Do you want me to buy you a carton to amuse us? Leave on mom's bedside? I mean, Virginia Slims aren't that bad for you. I mean, it takes 80 years of smoking them. Okay. Enough making fun of my mom. She's not going to be on the podcast ever. I really would like to try getting dad on the show for Putney Swope. I don't know. That might, but then that might break down. Like, how did you become a union buster? Sorry. Hey, you called for a potluck. And my gosh, I really need to get stoned and watch Space is the Place. I just don't think I'm appreciating the imagery in my peripheral without the marijuana. What did you give that 2.5 stars?
Yeah.
Yeah, which seems reasonable.
I wanted to, it's another one I wanted to like more than I did, but right. The low budget really works against it.
Oh.
It's looking like the some of the blocking is kind of Ed Wood level.
Oh no. You're dead on there. So yeah, I think you're beyond warranted. And that's why she's the smartest mind in Central Illinois cinema. Brad Jones, you may never come back, come below I-80. You abandoned us, the cinema snob.
You know, that reminds me, C2E2 is coming up. What are you looking forward to there?
Yeah, no.
That's going to be my next weekend off. I was free this weekend. Now I got to...
Yeah. I'm interested. I think Sven Gulli was announced.
Yes. Well, he's a fixture at C2E2. I mean, he's a local hero.
Yeah, and that might explain all the shirts, but I swear I've seen some shit at Hot Topic for him. But
It's really taking off more than ever the last year or so.
Yeah. And, you know, who knows? He might have a deal with 1 Hour Tees, which does pro wrestling tees, and they're the guys who got all the wrestling shirts.
They have a pretty extensive online. They have a pretty extensive online store as it is.
Yeah,
but they constantly rotate seasonal stuff in and out.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, you got to do a little research. But if he's with 1 Hour Tees, they've got quite the reach. I mean,
yeah.
They pretty much do all of All Elite Wrestling stuff. And the aliens are going back into boob shit. I don't know, like C2E2 for me, I am a guy who likes the more
because they've already put up the schedule.
Yeah, no, and I haven't looked at it.
Well, and most of it, I'm sure there'll be some changes going in.
Hey, there's a chance 90 for Chill gets a fill in somewhere.
I don't know.
Fingers crossed. I gotta go and buy Andrew TD a ticket, but you know.
They've got that one panel. They bring back that panel movies everyone disagrees with you on again.
Right.
You've been trying to break into.
Oh no, I made it last year and I'm surprised. You did. Yeah, no, I brought
which
up
which one was it? Can't remember which one you did.
I brought up Life Force. Brad Jones, all about it.
Yeah.
And it's like the rest of the guys did not see it. And so when the Nostalgia Critic looked at the poster, and I guess he got one of the weird posters, you can show that on a poster. It's like and I got to talk to the Nostalgia Critic, gave him a card for the podcast, and it's like, you know,
shooting the breeze and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
with looking at what's going on at C2E2 this year, it seems like there's a lot more outright industry stuff this
and
year.
No, and that's the word I was trying to think of. It's like, I dig the industry stuff.
There's like meetups for creators, you know, networking, basically.
Yeah, yeah. No, I dig the industry stuff more than, say, Fan Expo, which is really more about like, and you know,
I mean, I know C2E2's always been a bit more industry focused, but it seems like they're really doubling down on it this time.
You know, who knows? It might be something with Reed Pop, because they're now handling.
Like they're going to have Marvel portfolio reviews or something like that.
Yeah, I bring up Reed Pop though, just because they're taking over E3.
Oh, that too.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, it's going to be an interesting year because, like, everybody, like all the primary. Basically, Nintendo, Sony, and Xbox and Microsoft aren't doing E3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's like Reed Pop is probably going to be making that more of a fan thing. But personally, as I say, I like the industry stuff. Like, I think it was the 2019, maybe it was 2020, C2E2 when they did the Alien shorts to promote the 40th mm-hmm. anniversary of Alien.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got what is there when they get the voice actors to do a movie script, Toons Unleashed or something like that.
I know they're not doing it this year.
Oh yeah,
I know what you're talking about.
Right. I mean, Jim Cummins should be Disney royalty, but. No, so I usually get more out of C2E2 than I say Fan Expo, because Fan Expo is still, it's like Wizard World in this fact that it's still like, oh, it's kind of like we're taking Hollywood to the masses, but we're really just serving the nerds type element. So mm-hmm. I kind of like the fact that it's like the industry, it kind of feels a little more serious. Instead of, you know, nerds hoping to find their stepbrothers moment. Did we just become best friends? Yeah, and we're in a society. We're not going to be committed to the pen pal concept. So I can't really say I've researched too much. I've seen some great names come up in the newsletters and such. So I'm excited. I don't think Chris Evans is worth $240 for an autograph.
No, I'm not surprised they're going to charge that high.
I'm not surprised. I'm just saying it's like.
Yeah, it's like twice as much, almost twice as much as. I don't know how far I've ever paid. I don't think I've paid more than $125 in my experience. And yeah, that highest was for Jeff Goldblum.
Right. I think I may have paid 100, but that was for Smith and Muse. So usually autograph wise, it's an impulse thing for me, or a guilt, and a lot of time a guilt thing for me. Like, I was not at, like, how the hell did Robert Patrick not get room 25 at Wizard World 2021? It's like, it's Robert freaking Patrick. And then it's like, I'm trying to find something that purchase something for him to autograph, and it's like, the best thing I come up with a Terminator 2 poster. And it's like, I'm sorry, man, it's in Robert Patrick, very cool guy. What, it was Arnold's movie. But man, you're responsible for making John Cena an actor. That's something the Marines should be remembered for. Being the first great heel John Cena ever had to deal with. Yeah, screw you, Triple H. Screw you, Randy Orton. Screw you, Edge. Robert Patrick. Most meaningful bad guy John Cena's ever faced off against. And they ran it back in Peacemaker. But, now, autographs wise, it's like I got a Robert Patrick, I got Michael Rooker, I got Smith and Muse. I don't know. It's like, that's the problem with collecting and such. You know, it's like, yes, this is going to go up in value. And it's like, but that means you have to sell it at some point. But I love it. I don't want to sell it. Again, that goes to why I have a body bag full of memorabilia in my apartment. I figure if you're going, you know, all graves are going to get robbed at some point. I want there to actually be a prize with mine. But I do miss not wearing my Brett the Hitman Hart autographed Calgary Hitmen hockey jersey. But I do regret not asking Bret Hart to give me $2,500 for all the time I spent in professional wrestling. Because of him. Which is an interesting concept now that I think about it. Like, the entire idea is never meet your heroes. Mm-hmm. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I've had very good experiences with performers I've greatly admired on the whole.
Well, that's good. I mean, I say that with Bret Hart, and he was a cool guy, regardless. Mm-hmm. Sorry, don't want to make him sound bad. It's like, have you really had the genuine heroes, though, I suppose? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm diving too much in artistic stuff. I mean, for me, Kevin Smith is a hero. And he was a very cool guy, and I really wish I would have abused him like every other person in line. Mm-hmm. Instead of, no, just tag it, man. You're cool. You know, it's like, I should have been pitching myself to get on Smodcast. yeah, so, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm getting into artistic influence and such. Like, obviously, as a aspiring screenwriter, Kevin Smith is a thing. Same thing with Tarantino. Do you have any authors or, you know, writers that you would have really loved to have met?
I don't know.
That's why she's a genius. She knows she's better than all of them. So, righty. So, C2E2, we talked Oscars, we talked weird movies.
And I want, if you don't mind, we can finish up with one more quick question off the cuff. Do you think we passed peak superhero movie at this point?
Because
Ant-Man 3 is not doing as well as expected, which is not a great thing, given that this was supposed to be the point where we're finally starting to get some focus with where the Marvel movies and shows are going.
Well, I wouldn't have chosen Ant-Man to be that project.
No, it does seem a bit weird offhand. While DC doesn't seem to know what it wants to do at this point, seems like it's trying to burn off a lot of stuff. It's not totally clear that what's been promised to come is going to show up.
Well, I would say I think the superhero thing is perhaps a victim of the pandemic.
I don't know. I mean, the general consensus seems to be as to why Marvel is in decline, leaving out bad faith arguments, is that a lot of people just jump ship after Endgame and don't really feel a pressing need to come back.
Oh, no, that's obviously true. Once Endgame happened, it felt like the story was closed. And
if Ant-Man 3 can't get things into focus, we have two other Marvel movies this year. One is the last Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yeah.
Which, you know, because it is the last, that's also shutting the door. And the other is the Marvels, which Disney's just changed the release date for again, like less than 2 weeks before they do the big Disney animated musical for Thanksgiving. So it's not a lot of time.
Now, I'll put it this way. I want to see Guardians 3. I want to see the Marvels, but we don't have any other new Marvel property, correct?
No, no movies.
Okay. Right. So, no, I think it was
this year.
Okay. I think it was a victim of the pandemic and the fact that people aren't going to go rush out for the next thing. I'll say that. You're right. I think a lot of people are like, oh, the story's over after Endgame. And it's like, okay, now it's become more of a nerd thing. So,
yeah.
It's with that said, that would basically say once it becomes a nerd thing, go to television. That's the safest spot for it. Nobody's going to. I'm rewatching True Blood right now as I get stoned. Yeah. And it's like, oh, God, those effects wouldn't pass anywhere else. But it's on TV, so I forgive it. So TV's the way to go. It should have been the way to go. But I don't know. It's like, again, it's like, I really want a Star Wars movie. I want that to be a reason to request a night off. And no offense to you, Rory. It's like they were telling me about my schedule. Well, you better request that weekend of the last weekend of March off. And it's like, I already did. Well, I don't think they're going to remember it, so better do it here. And it's like, well, I don't know how the new employer works. It's like, what do I say to make sure I get C2E2 off? And I basically said, I am escorting my sister to C2E2. I may have brought up, like, you know, your spectrum. It's like, and then I'm bringing that up to people. It's like, you should have sold it even more. But no, it's like, I really wanted the Disney movie. I mean, I really wanted this. I've been dying for a Star Wars movie. And I don't know. And honestly, I like the fact that TV's been the last thing for 3 years, because then I'm going to be totally pumped. So, yeah, it's just like, we need a time off. From the movies. And I think the biggest problem is DC is still trying to come up with stuff.
Yeah.
Like, basically, we needed a total shutdown on comic book movies. Period. Unless it's like weird stuff. Like, I know The Losers sucked. I know a lot of people didn't get Watchmen, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Familiarity is a curse right now.
Mm-hmm. Or unfamiliarity, because,
well, but we're supposed, but you say unfamiliarity, but the name Marvel should make us immediately familiar is what I think was the entire downfall of, what is it, Stage 4 was the last one?
Phase 4,
whatever. Like, okay, yeah, I want to see Black Widow. Cool. Who are the fucking Internals? Which really makes me feel bad that I just recently bought the Obi-Wan Kenobi character that Kumail Nanjiani just portrayed as a Funko Pop. I didn't buy his Eternals one. So, yeah, but I'm just saying, it's like, we go back to 2014. Who the hell were the Guardians of the Galaxy?
Well, you can argue that
we just like, oh, it's Marvel, so it's going to be okay.
Yeah, but if somebody was asking that with regards to the Marvels, it's been pointed out that,
which is the one I'm looking forward to most, in all honesty.
Yeah, but it requires you to be familiar with at least one movie and two different television series.
And I'm game for that. I haven't watched the Miss Marvel yet, but that was one I was pumped for.
But that's the thing. If for those of you guys who haven't watched them, what is the hook? Because Guardians of the Galaxy, you might not have heard of before that, but it wasn't just that it was a Marvel movie. At least it had a hook of a premise of wacky team of space adventurers do adventure thing.
I wouldn't say that's a hook. I wouldn't say that was a great hook, though. Again, let's bring up Ice Pirates.
At least it's something you can sum up quickly.
Okay, yeah.
Execution is the
Right.
At least it gets you through the door. The execution is where you can really run into trouble. But at least if you can get them through the door with a hook.
No, you're right. I'm just saying I don't think it was a strong hook, but
I mean the Marvels does not have a hook. It's
only if you like the Miss Marvel movie and people are pretty much like blew that one off as, well, at least we're taking the time to establish a character.
Some people have pointed out, we don't even really know who who Captain Marvel really is. She spent 80% of the movie with amnesia.
I would say that...
We don't even know what her personality is.
I would say we got a pretty good idea through the flashbacks and such. Look, I'm going to respect anybody who wears a 9-inch nail shirt before it was really cool. And let's just face it, the reason to watch, I mean, I like Captain Marvel. I love Goose. But the reason to watch it is the establishment of Nick Fury.
I still like Jessica Ritchie arguing that all this was done better in The Long Kiss Goodnight, which also has Samuel L. Jackson. Right.
Well, the key is Samuel L. Jackson. So, in other words, we would not be having this discussion if the entire Phase 4 was centered around Nick Fury.
That is an interesting way of looking at it, but he can never really be the lead. That's not something you build the whole thing around. You have to build it around a big hero.
But okay, but that's so Nick Fury is basically the Watcher.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm just saying I loved What If. I also love the actor who I keep ever forgetting his name. Jeffrey Wright. All right, didn't even need I was pulling up IMDb, but they came to my head. I love Jeffrey Wright, and it's like I loved how What If concluded with him basically just like, oh, I guess I got to piece all this bullshit together, and that would be perfect for Nick Fury. Oh, I guess I got to piece all this bullshit together. There you go, Nick Fury, piecing bullshit. That's a movie. I meant to say, I don't think I made it sound right, like piecing up bullshit. It's like, no, piecing bullshit, Nick Fury. That's a movie. I mean, I don't know if it's going to sell in the cinema, but the VOD, through the roof.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. It's going to be, we're in for an interesting time in cinema, and I think there might be a time for course correction because we still haven't really figured out how to get back from the pandemic.
History repeats. In some senses, the great hope you could have is that just the way that we had got a bunch of crappy musicals for a few years after Sound of Music hit it big and the studios nearly lost their shirts, and then that opened up the way for more independent creatives to come into Hollywood and give us the triumphs of the 70s and I would argue some of the early 80s. Well, but I don't think Hollywood system, American movie making system, is set up to allow that kind of reconstruction to happen again.
I think you're kind of right with it not being prepared for that.
Yeah,
I've been watching a lot. I think I've subscribed to Adam Conover's YouTube channel. So, I got that reality set into me. Damn, he does ruin everything. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying. But when you say history repeats itself, where you had the 70s being probably the finest time for cinema, and then you had kind of a 90s figuring out what the next stage is, which gave us a lot of great movies. And all, you know,
90s had kind of the indie boom, the real indie boom.
Right. And so we're running behind 20 years, basically. We need that course correction.
But it's a lot harder to do when
everything's it's a lot harder to do.
When the studio system collapsed, they were just studios. And that
you're right.
That made them prey for big corporations to swallow them up, like Gulf and Western buys Paramount Pictures.
Right. GE. I mean, I know it's television, but what? Westinghouse owns CBS.
Transamerican bought United Artists.
Yeah.
This is what Mel Brooks is making fun of in his film Silent Movie, where the villains are from the corporation Engulf and Devour.
Oh, jeez.
Which is trying to buy out the movie studio that the main characters are trying to save. It's called Engulf and Devour. We own you.
Yes, no, and it's brilliant. And I really still need to watch a lot more Mel Brooks.
But Coca-Cola owned Columbia Pictures for a time in the 80s.
That's a weird slip up. I mean, yeah. What? Bill Cosby ruined you that much with New Coke?
No, they bought it before the New Coke debacle. But
well, I'm saying New Coke brought it down. Bill Cosby ruins everything. That should be a podcast.
But the studios were in a much weaker position in the 1980s and 90s. So they had to try harder.
Yeah.
The 70s and 80s and they had to try harder in the 70s and 80s to get back on their feet, because even 80s big studio filmmaking in a lot of ways is more interesting and varied than what we get now.
Well, I mean, you say all this and it's kind of like, I'm thinking we're prepped for a collapse at some point.
I think we're already in the middle of it, because the studios are now a lot more powerful as they're part of these giant multimedia conglomerates, and there's only a handful of them. I once read that in the 1980s, only about 40% of the overall market was held by the big studios, like Paramount and Columbia. A lot of smaller companies were filling in the rest of that 60%, like I think Orion counted there.
Well, no, and so, we're not, but I'm just saying.
Little upstarts like TriStar that were eventually folded into larger companies.
Yeah.
And New Line Cinema and other B-picture distributors, they had a lot more share.
Yes, you're right.
And now we only have about four or five major companies left that own everything and right. And thus, even if they're collapsing, they're not going to respond to the problem by trying to get creative new talent to do new things.
Well, no, they're not. Things are just going to get like we're at a point, I think, where things are just going to keep constantly getting reshuffled over the next decade. I think Discovery is not going to last as the Warner Brothers owner. I think that'll fall apart. Paramount seems to be in a good state, and you know, hey, I hate the fact that they aren't involved with movies anywhere, but they'll be all right. Amazon's not going to know what to do with MGM, so that'll free up. Disney's the nightmare, sadly.
Yeah.
Because when you look at HBO, I mean, not HBO, Warner Brothers, and all the changes being made there, it's kind of like, well, you have somebody who doesn't know what Warner Brothers does owning it. Disney knows exactly what they're doing with every move. And yeah. You kind of have to respect that after they lost 500, well, I'm just going to say, $1 billion on John Carter and Mars Needs Moms, mm-hmm. and the Lone Ranger. So I say $1 billion, and now I'm saying that's $2 billion. So, and Disney is probably the strongest of all conglomerates right now.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing's going to stop Disney, but I think there'll be a course correction with Warner Brothers, and Sony's really got to figure out their shit, how they fit into the scheme. But I think it's really just going to have to be, until we have an Avatar movie that doesn't make $1 billion. So we're probably looking at Avatar 4 by that point, my prediction. I guess you can say nothing's going to change. So I haven't checked the release date on Avatar 3. I'm hoping it's soon, just so we can rush this, but you know. I know Avatar, well, Avatar 4 and 5, those are supposed to be Cameron movies, and then it's going to be 10 years at least before we get Avatar 6, which James Cameron has to train a director to be James Cameron. So, but, you know, there are, since this movie, like, having that discussion, so I had the initial discussion with one of my managers at my new employer. That was the one about Fargo. Then I had a, you know, conversation with my other manager, and that was like, oh yeah, Disney shit the bet, phoned in phase 5. And it's like, but he really brought up the fact that, gosh, you must do a lot of old movies here on a podcast, because nobody can do under an hour and 20, 2 hours anymore. So, I guess I'm just saying that I think there's going to be a, as long, you know, I hate to say it, don't go to the movies, folks. It's as long as you got a good internet connection, we can kind of course correct thing. When you see something HBO dismisses and puts on streaming services so they can get licensing fees to cover the residuals they don't want to pay, watch that shit. So yeah, it's just I think there, you know, and as time goes on, it takes longer for history to repeat itself, I think, is the problem. And like, because we learned, and it's like, no, you're putting is, you know, band-aids on the Kennedy head wound.
Mm-hmm.
It's you can you can keep John Kennedy's brain alive long enough to put him in a black person, but it's going to die at some point. And that was a real weird trying to respect Bubba Hotep, but no, it just sucks that we got to wait longer for things to fix itself, I think, is the problem.
Uh-huh.
It will fix itself. Or you just have to at least have that hope, I suppose. So in the meantime, go to places like B-Fest, I suppose. Gosh, I really wish I could just start a Patreon so I can take Fridays off and do whatever the people on Windy City Double Feature Picture Show tell me to go and watch at the Music Box Theater in Chicago. Or better yet, start a Patreon so I can move to Chicagoland. Hey, with that said, Rory, I don't mind your presence. How about we start moving your career up to Chicagoland too?
I can't do it right now.
Well, okay. I'm just saying, at least you said right now, so that means there's a chance to recite one Lloyd Christmas. Ah, a world without nieces and nephews, Rory. That's what I'm proposing. I love my nieces and nephews, but I'm actually, as I like to joke, I'm envious of my nieces and nephews because they get to play with toys. The only reason I'd ever consider having offspring is just so I can play Star Wars with somebody. You were never a toy girl back growing up. I mean, I think you picked up Barbie's bullshit pretty fast, in other words.
Hmm.
I think you may have had some She-Ra toys. That's about it.
Yeah, I had Barbies and Care Bears, My Little Pony, She-Ra's, a little strawberry shortcake.
Oh well, yeah. Aside from Barbie, my Little Pony, She-Ra, Rainbow Wright, those are pretty. Like those are cool. I think ideas. Care Bears, love my Care Bears. But yeah, I'm just saying. I didn't see a dream house until Ryan came around. Please, Sam, I'm not you didn't have a dream house, did you?
No.
All right, that was all Ryan. Okay. So, 90 for Chill, the podcast where the cool kids hang out. If you don't think we're cool kids, you don't respect kids. All right, so. All right, well, we're coming up on near kickoff for the AEW Revolution pre-show, where I just need to see Mark Briscoe, and well, that just tells you how much paid attention I have to the pre-show. But all right, well, you can find the Poetic Critic on Letterboxd. Her username is the Poetic Critic. You can follow me on Twitter at CatBusRuss if you need to figure out where the Poetic Critic is. Anything you want to promote besides that?
Not today.
Okay. As always, the real place to follow me is Mastodon. The username is Russ Stevens at mastodon.social. It will pick up someday. George Takei, Elvira, and Neil Gaiman promised me that. Otherwise, if you want to be on the podcast, send an email to russthebus07@gmail.com. That's RussTheBus07@gmail.com. Offer me a movie, a theme, a director, an actor. Just try to focus on sub-100-minute material. Even if it isn't, I will figure a way to make it work out. Or if you just want to bullshit like me and the Poetic Critic did today, that's cool. But I love the fact we somehow figured out the Oscars of 1988. 25 years later. So that was pretty cool. Otherwise, thank you, Stacia Harden, for looking after me through these last 20 odd years. It's only been 19, but yeah, it feels like it. You better be taking care of Skimble, or Skimble better be taking care of you, that little one-eared angel. But regardless, you know, as long as you keep looking after everybody you affected in your life in a positive manner, we're going to be just fine. So thank you very much to the Poetic Critic for coming on, saving the day like she's done so many a times. Sorry I didn't have any Jim Carrey or Jeff Goldblum to immediately throw at you.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. So until next week, thanks for coming to 90 for Chill, the podcast, and have yourselves a good night.
Thank you.
Here's the hoping Brian Danielson is our new AEW champion. So thanks again, Rory.
You're welcome.
Can I hear a wahoo?